is you interlock the two.
Now stretch them quite as
soccer and the fifth.
Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
I felt like a reptile. Like a reptile. I felt like a reptile.
Yeah, cool.
You good?
Yeah, all good, man.
We rolling?
We are rolling.
Happy days. Hello and welcome to Four Reptile Radio, episode 15?
14.
14?
Yeah.
You sure it's not 15?
Pretty sure. Should have checked this before we started, but maybe it is 15.
Do you want me to have a quick check? Because people need to know. Do you reckon they'll be frustrated if it's the wrong number?
I'm just like recollecting in my mind, making a thumbnail, and I think it's 15.
Four Reptile Radio is currently, we've done episode 14, so we'll stick with 15.
Yeah, this is 15. Apologies.
It's all good. I don't like to say I told you so, so I won't. But all good, how are you? You had a good week?
Yeah, been really good, man. Yeah, a lot better than last week. I was pretty ill last week. My hay fever was just, I don't know if anyone gets hay fever really bad, but I do. And it's hell when it's like this time of year. It's just like so irritable, like itchy everywhere.
Horrible.
Like snotty, coughing.
Oh, yeah, man.
It's like having the flu, but in summer. So it's super hot.
Yeah.
Which makes it even worse.
I have to have antihistamines all the time for my eczema.
Yeah.
Just to see if it calms it down. Because even though my skin doesn't always look bad, it sometimes feels like I'm on fire.
Yeah.
And I can just scratch. Like scolding myself in the shower is one of my favourite things. Worst thing for it. But genuinely, honestly, it's that instant release. Because I'm not physically like raking my skin and breaking my skin. I'm just scolding it. It's doing the same sort of thing.
Does like super cold not help as well?
Not really. Nowhere near the same. So like even a hairdryer. I've had like a dry bath before with a hairdryer and just fucking scorched myself. Yeah. It's horrible, but it's just the one thing, you know, when you can find something that gives you a bit of relief.
Like hot iron, and like...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I'll make a cup of tea and I'll put the spoon on my hand, or like you can see my hand and my knuckles are all jacked, and I'll put like the hot spoon on something that's itching and it instantly stops.
Yeah.
But then that gets really sore and it's just shit. But I know, I was talking to you about this before, and obviously if any of you guys know or have had any experience with this, please put in the comments and let us know. One of my good friends, Ross, has an injection.
You were telling me about this. Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff about it online, but obviously it's always better to hear from people.
Mm-hmm.
And he was told, I could have adverse effects. And once we've injected you, if it makes you more itchy, there's nothing we can do. And obviously scared him off a little bit. And eventually bit the bullet and he has an injection. I think it lasts between 3 and 6 months. And he says, best thing he's ever done.
Mm.
So for him, it works flawlessly. So as soon as he feels that tingle, that nose run, just the itchy throat, everything, he goes straight down, gets his injection. I think it's about 50 quid. But if you guys have had good or bad, because the last thing I want to do is tell Jamie, go and get an injection. Then he's obviously scratching his skin off.
Head or something.
Yeah. Scolded himself in the shower. Let us know. Let us know if you've had any experiences yourself, because there's a fix.
Yeah, I know, 100%. I mean, I used to get it really bad when I was younger. Then it kind of died off for a few years. And then like the past couple of years, it's just come back like with a vengeance.
Yeah.
But I was reading up on it and apparently it's getting worse due to like
the climate change. And climate change.
Yeah, like it seems to be getting worse. More people are like getting it and stuff like that. I'm not sure exactly what causes it, but yeah.
I know that allergies and things are getting a lot more. It's either they're the same, but now they're being recognised, or like, without sounding like a grumpy old bastard that sat in a pub drinking a pint of Guinness, when I was little, you were in the mud. You were in amongst a load of shit all the time.
Yeah, same.
So it was one of them that you weren't really, like, if you'd build an immunity.
Yeah, you're exposed to it.
Precisely. Yeah. Whereas now, there is a lot more. Like really everything's so careful. Like my brother came back from Chicago and all the apps and all the shit they had for their babies. I mean, my kids are only what, 15 and 11. So it's not that long ago.
Mm.
But his are, I think, three and not even one. And they've got like a white noise box. They've got like a sterilizer for a dummy. They've got, that's probably me. Yeah. They've got all this mad shit that you would be like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
they had
yeah.
apps to tell them when to feed, when to burp. And it was, that's their normal.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how responsible being overcautious is for then future problems.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, like kind of too sheltered almost.
For real?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like you don't really see, I mean, I don't really go in the suburbs of the city much, but you don't really see kids playing out and stuff anymore like that often. And like, yeah,
it's not the same.
I think just with the world, like their parents are a little bit more cautious of like everything.
Yeah, it's cautious and it's the unlimited internet. So like if you go back in the day when the internet first came out, it was dial up. And if you were on the internet, you couldn't use the phone and it was a fixed PC in the corner of a room or something like that. And obviously if it was ever like a sharing thing, I don't know, like playing Unreal Tournament or Quake or something like that,
yeah.
you had to have like something pretty designated or it was expensive.
Yeah.
And then even when it came to phones, when phones first came out, to use the internet was fucking astronomical. Yeah. It was like 10p or 50p a text or a picture message was insane.
Mm.
Whereas now, even like my youngest, she'll have her phone on WhatsApp. So she's calling her two cousins and a couple of friends. So they've got like a conference call going on for free on WhatsApp. Yeah. She's got a tablet playing Roblox or Minecraft or whatever it is for free because it's free to download. So she's in this like immersive world. And then on the TV, she'll have Netflix on.
Mm.
And obviously...
And then your AI generating your homework in the background.
Precisely. So she's living it up. I mean, she's not always on there because obviously we limit times. But the thing is, when you look at it, like even when you go back 20 years, when mobile phones were reasonable and you were paying £60 a month for a Nokia, I don't know.
3210.
3210 or the sliding one. What was that? The
5G. Samsung G500.
Yeah.
I had one of them.
N95 was my favorite.
Oh yeah, that Nokia, the Nokia.
Yeah, so it's like it was a block. And if you push the screen up, you got a keypad. And if you pushed it down, you had like a play and pause.
Yeah, yeah. I remember people had them at school and like everyone was like, whoa, you got a Nokia N95?
Yeah.
Shit.
And it was cool, man. It was probably good. But like that cost me, for the phone, it was a few hundred quid. Then it was like 70 something pound a month or £60 a month for like, it would have been say 500 minutes. 500 texts, no internet.
That's a day worth of chatting.
Yeah, and you're like, okay, no worries. Whereas now, if I'm paying more than £20 for unlimited fucking everything, I'm fuming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I want everything for nothing. And I suppose everyone's just growing up with that. That's normal.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So I don't know if that's affecting hay fever, but I'm pretty sure it's
the 5G, man. That's what's causing it.
It is. It's just, it makes
birds
people more.
Birds dropping out the sky, people dying of hay fever.
Why is that 5G? Yeah, we should weaponize it. Fuck me. So yeah, so fingers crossed, mate, it's getting a bit better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it kind of dies out towards like mid-July. So yeah, it's because I'm allergic to grass pollen in particular.
Right.
And that's like, that pollinates and it's like flourishing this time of year. So once July's over,
oh shit,
it just dies away.
So you basically have to just lock yourself in for
and not walk across any parks.
Oh,
and if
shit.
I do, then I'm done for.
Oh man. Well, let us know about the injection because we want Jamie to go to the park. That's not fair. You can't not go to the park, man. Jesus. But other than that, I mean, we've got last week to catch up on, I suppose. We've got 289 that that we've missed.
Yep.
Then we've got this weekend or last weekend's Cannoneer and Vittori.
Yeah, that was. Well, should we start on that? Being it's the most recent one.
If that's where we're going. There's no schedule. You've got a little bit of something, but we could talk about whatever you want, dude.
All right. Well, being we missed 289. We'll recap on that. And I might just say first of all, like Charles Oliveira was as good as I expected him to be.
Are you saying now I told you so? Is this your I told you so moment?
A little bit, yeah.
Good, good. Mate, I'll take it. I'll take it all day. And
I'm just a massive, like he's like by far, besides maybe Holloway, definitely one of my favourite fighters on the roster. Just because of what he brings, like I always get excited when it's Charles Oliveira, like fight week and Now he's learned English as well. Like, he can give the shit to people even better. Yeah, it's cool, man. I just like him as a fighter, his whole style. Like, and I really want to see him get back to the top of the division as well.
See him reign again.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I think the whole thing I love about this sport, pretty much more than anything, is that you never fucking know.
Mm.
And I think, obviously, we've seen corruption in a lot of other sports, and we've seen people just holding things up. And to have that unknown element of, like, there's always a puncher's chance, or there's always a chance one way or another. And I think after we spoke, and obviously with Benil being such a tough old motherfucker, that it just put me on notice, because I was like, look, Benil's been fighting nonstop. He's coming off incredible performances, and obviously Charles had the weight issue, and he's had an injury, and he's lost his belt. And there's that weird motivation drop once they've had the belt and lost it. And I don't know, man. I think the fact that when you look back at Charles' career, or when you look at him as a person, regardless of his status, he's been all about people first.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, in COVID, he was going around and looking after people, and mm-hmm. I don't think he's really changed.
Yeah.
So he's, like, the fears or the worries that I had were obviously immediately erased as soon as I saw him perform. But it's one of those that, like, you never know. And I suppose that for me was that, like, I'll always say, I can't bet. I can never, ever bet, because I normally get everything wrong. So if you ever wanted to make a bet on my predictions, always go opposite and mm-hmm. you'll win fucking millions. But, I mean, he came on my radar years and years ago. I mean, when he fought Jim Miller the first time, he was a really hot prospect that was coming up and was a slick jiu-jitsu player and was fucking incredible, taking over the world. And then Jim Miller subbed him. And I was like, holy shit, Jim Miller's a fucking savage. And he obviously carried on. He lost a couple. But then there was a point where he started to turn the tables and he mm-hmm. was like, look, this is my division now.
Yeah.
And then even before that, he was impressive. But then when he fought Jim Miller again and sort of big brothered him, I was like, oh, remember that time when you subbed me? Watched this and fucking just hulked him into a ball and just fucked him over. I was like, yo, Charlie's.
Yeah. I think around that time, and especially the Kevin Lee fight.
Yeah.
And then that was the main, I think that was a Brazilian main event. That was around when COVID kind of started rumouring around the world. But yeah, after that main event and the way he finished that fight, and then I think that kind of was his staple performance of, like, nah, I'm going to turn it on. This, like you said, this is my division. And then obviously his performance against Tony as well. Like, was, I mean, if Tony wasn't, like, made of rubber and was a bit crazy, I think, you know, he would have finished anyone else that way. But yeah, he's just wicked, wicked to watch. He's always entertaining. And I really want to see him reign to the top again. And I think because obviously the way he kind of lost the belt as well, you know, being stripped of it because of missing weight and then losing to Makhachev. And then he came in this time a pound underweight as well. Yeah. Like, really, focused, you know, make man. A statement. And then his performance as well. I mean, the first, like, couple of minutes of the fight, I thought Benil did really well. But yeah, it's just like, it was almost inevitable that was going to happen.
His speed, though.
Yeah.
I think that was the, obviously, when you're watching, and we've said this before, you predominantly watch one fighter more than the other. But if you ever get a chance to watch it twice, it's always really worth it. Because sometimes when you see something land that you might not think is that significant, even if it's a 10% detriment to the opponent, the speed then, in my opinion, it's like if Charles's speed is insanely fast and 100% or like 30% faster than Benil, as soon as he's been like knocked down 10%, then that speed is like a 50% increase mm-hmm. because you're obviously like, well, you're in trouble. So obviously when he started landing, I was like, dude, this is, it's different levels.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose even when you look at his record, like, you've got
his resume.
Mate, Gaethje, Poirier, fucking Dan
Hooker?
No. Yeah. Did he fight Dan Hooker? No.
Ferguson. Kevin Lee. Jim Miller.
No, wait. Chandler.
Chandler, yeah.
I don't know why. It got Dandler. Stuck. Dandler. But when Chandler came in and made a statement.
Yeah.
I know he got Hooker, and obviously Hooker seemed a bit cold.
Mm-hmm.
And Hooker, at that point, I think what we've got to remember is his life had been upside down.
Yeah, yeah. Well, with the whole COVID thing
had fucked him.
Not being able to get home and stuff like that,
for months. Mm-hmm. And obviously, that's got a weird effect on shit, because that's your partner, your kids, your life, your normal life that you're not returning to. And obviously, Chandler made that look pretty fucking easy, and then sort of started dominating Charles in the first. So all of it is insane when it's on paper. Like, if you were watching that as a movie, it's just, he's clearing out divisions, he's clearing out places, and obviously it shows you how good Makhachev is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm super excited to watch the rematch.
Yeah. The thing is, because a lot of people were talking about before the fight, you know, Charles was a little bit reckless, you know, because in the Chandler fight, he got knocked down and he almost got finished in the first.
And Gaethje.
And then same with Gaethje as well. I think Poirier, you know, he got pieced up quite a bit. But like that recklessness, I feel like he's kind of like honed it in a little bit.
Yeah.
And he's kind of been able to manipulate that and kind of use it a bit more in a sharper way. And that's what I thought, I saw in his performance against Benio, he'd kind of like honed that recklessness and made it a bit more focused and like didn't kind of make mistakes to get clipped or anything like that.
Sometimes I like that though. I like that mentality of go big or go home.
Yeah. Same. Do you know what I mean? If you can take that and kind of make it into a strength rather than a weakness, I feel like,
I suppose it's a 50-50 in it.
The drive to do what you want to do, but you're not making the mistakes that you did the first time.
Yeah. But I mean, all in all, is there a road sweeper outside?
Skateboarder or something, I don't know.
Just a really loud, floors up.
I seen that clip the other day, you know, where McGregor's in an interview and he's like, is that Max Holloway?
And Max Holloway just skateboards fast. Yeah. That was a Fight Island, right?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Fucking jokes.
Just skateboarding. Jesus. But the whole event, for saying obviously that Amanda Nunes was retiring after that fight, and obviously she won and she put on a dominant performance.
Mm-hmm.
It was Charles'
so
night,
dominant. She looked leagues above Irene Aldana. And I know Aldana's like, you know, she's ranked a little bit lower in division, like in terms to everyone else. And it was meant to be the Pena fight, but I just feel like no one in that division is going to beat an Amanda Nunes on that day.
No. And I think realistically, like when she retired, it was a weird thing in my opinion. It was like it was the most selfish thing, but at the same time it was the most selfless thing.
Yeah.
Selfish in the way that obviously she's a dominating champion that's got two belts. I know one division's going, but at the same time she could keep coming in, keep putting on performances, keep winning, and obviously carrying on with her dominance. So retiring is kind of selfish,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, completely selfless, because she's got to where she wants to get to. She's had enough. She said, you know what? I'm done, finished, that's it. And she's now going to open up that division massively, because look at light heavyweight division. So since John Jones vacated his title, what have we had? Four champions?
Yeah. Yeah, in light heavyweight, yeah.
Insane.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So when John Jones vacated the title, then we've had like four champions. Glover, Yeary, Jamal. And even like with Anderson Silva, and obviously it wasn't then just passed around a lot, but it makes it more interesting, because when you know that Amanda's cleared out the division and you see the same names coming up, you're like, what's she going to do different? You're kind of just waiting for the same thing to happen.
Yeah.
And it just makes it slightly more exciting,
mm-hmm.
because to see a belt change hands is fucking exciting anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see someone that gets to the top of the tree, and we've seen it a lot, we've seen Anderson Silva, we've seen Matt Hughes, we've seen fucking John Jones, Shevchenko, Ioana Jacek, DJ. So many people have done it and they've made this incredible run, which is fantastic for them. But then for us as the fans, sometimes it's that like little bit of bite in there to see who's going to get what.
Yeah, it's exciting when it does change hands because it just keeps the division active.
Yeah, yeah.
But, so yeah, it's like, same, I suppose, like with the Izzy as well, like he was dominant for so long and then Pereira came along and did that. And
yeah.
That's just, it just makes it so much more interesting. It makes you more interested in watching Israel Adesanya again. Exactly. Not that I wasn't anyway. I always enjoyed his fights, because, but it just throws something else into the mix and it makes it more exciting as well. And yeah. like, you know, as an underdog or like there's a nemesis coming back or whatever from yeah. their past, it just makes it a much more interesting story.
It's always exciting to see what happens when a champ loses.
Mm.
And I think, love or hate any fighter, then you'll normally tune in to see, like, if you don't like them, you'll tune in to see if they're going to get stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do like them, you want to tune in to see them carry on their run.
Yeah.
But it's like when Rampage came back, and he basically came back, and then he was like, right, Chuck, I want, and Chuck called for Rampage, because Chuck got the belt back off Randy, and basically went on a bit of a, I need to get all my losses back. And he started off with Jeremy Horn, and he sort of ran through. Jeremy Horn tapped and asked to stop because he couldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck beat the shit through him. Obviously, the whole Vandalay before that, because Vandalay was Pride, he was UFC. That was a big fight at Christmas that went to the decision, but Chuck still won that. And then when Rampage came back, Chuck was kind of like, well, I'm obviously going to knock him out because this is my house. And it was one of them where, unfortunately, on this occasion, you saw Chuck get finished. And then just keep getting finished. Rashad and Keith Jardine and Shogun and Rich Franklin. It was a sad finish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas like when you see other people, like they can either get close enough to win it, but like Izzy's retained his title. But in the history, there's not that many fighters that have lost a belt and recaptured it.
Yeah, yeah.
Really.
Mm-hmm.
So like Rose, like I say, I can't, like Izzy, Rose, yeah. There's not that many that you could be like, not holy the, shit.
Like the, well, has it been a case where they've been, because obviously Jones, he got stripped of it, but then he won it back.
Yeah, so but that not, wasn't, he didn't lose
actually
it.
Lose it. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like Matt Serra, GSP lost to Matt Serra and then GSP retained it. It got it back from Matt Serra.
Yeah.
So there's a few.
That's a proof. I was, because... The thing is, you know, there's that ongoing discussion about who the greatest of all time is and, like, obviously Habib and stuff, like, having the unbeaten record. But, like, I feel like to lose your belt and then get it back is much more of an accomplishment than...
Massive. Well, you look at DJ.
Yeah.
So DJ, the trouble is, it's always the...
Especially in MMA, yeah. I think.
But it's always the depth of the division as well.
Mm.
Because it's strange because of how hard... heavier people can punch, and obviously how fast lighter people are. There's so many elements to all aspects of it. So you got to respect it all. But is the depth of the division that DJ was in the same as light heavyweight or heavyweight or middleweight? Maybe not.
Mm.
But to do what DJ's done, where he's basically cleared out the UFC nonstop, I still think he beat Henry Cejudo when he lost his belt, but that's by the by. Obviously going across, losing, then winning, and then retaining, and then getting... That's fucking insane. Like, Habib, is it 29-0?
Yeah.
Not all of his 29 are superstars.
Mm-hmm.
So did he have 10 in the UFC or 12?
12, I think. Yeah. I think 12 fights.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was 12.
Yeah. So 12 top end, and obviously looked good doing it. And... again, he was the master of his own destiny. He was like, do you know what, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know who I'd put as the GOAT. The same as like John Jones. He's had so many different controversies, not necessarily other than the sport. I mean, like the pictograms or whatever it is. Whenever there's a question mark over someone, it's really fucking difficult.
Well, there's so many things that go towards people that can be classed as a GOAT for like different reasons. Like Jones obviously is never, you know, he's just been the greatest because of what he's done and like the way he finishes fights, the way he's dominated like over a long period. And then he's moved up and he's claimed another championship as well, like two division champs. But then you can put people like Conor McGregor in that bracket as well. You know, you can, there's so many like, variables that go into the, obviously Khabib's got the unbeaten record, so on paper it looks like the best. But then you got people like GSP who claimed it back, and then Izzy right. as well. Even like there's so much. It's hard to nail down like one person as the greatest all time, unless you're just basing it off one thing, which is like a record. Or
if it is, I think that's what makes the conversation so fluid, because everyone can have a point.
Mm.
Everyone can have a justification to every single person. Mm-hmm. You could choose Cowboy or Jim Miller or Tony Ferguson. There's so, like there's reasons behind all of it. Mm-hmm. Like when you look at someone that wasn't born into wealth and wasn't put through wrestling school and didn't have all the opportunities that other people have had, it's classic Rocky IV. It's Ivan Drago sat in like a fucking high tech fucking place getting all this top end equipment and treatment, and you got Rocky Balboa beating the shit out of the side of a cow.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's, yeah.
But when you look at someone like Charles Oliveira, that has been brought up in Brazil and struggled and really, really had to put everything into this, it's a lot different. I mean, even Connor, look at Connor, he was on the dole and he was going to be a plumber, but then he got obsessed with this game. So there's so many elements to all of it. I think it's more a case of, you just have your favourites.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm. And I think...
You could argue Amanda Nunes as well, you know. Like,
all day.
Of course, she's the greatest women's MMA fighter of all time, but she could easily be put into the bracket of like just the greatest of all time.
Yeah, but then someone would then counter that with saying, well, no, Ronda's the greatest of all time, because if it wasn't for her, there wouldn't be a women's division in the UFC.
And say that for Conor, because what he did for the sport inside and out.
Exactly.
Like Khabib probably wouldn't be as big of a star, really.
Yeah,
because without that fight and that dispute. And yeah.
Because even if, like, you could say, all right, one of the elements of being the greatest of all time is how many fights you've had and how long it's taken to have those fights. So Ronda's first six fights were the total of like, what, 4 minutes?
Yeah.
So if you can say, right, she's had 10 fights with 9 finishes, overall total ring time was 13 minutes, or, well, 17, 18 minutes, then that's fucking impressive. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, do you then look at someone like Cannonier this weekend, who's just broken a record of 241 strikes?
Yeah, insane.
But at the same time, that's given Vittori a massive to say, you've absorbed 241 strikes, you didn't get fucking... So it is a pub chat. The greatest of all time is a pub chat, because it's not relevant all the time, because there are too many divisions. Like, you've got to have a greatest of all time with, like, because when they say, oh, pound for pound, you can't get a shrunk down Rampage to fight DJ.
Yeah.
And then you can't blow Rampage up to fight Brock Lesnar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you could, but it's not this, like, they are best at their weight.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the pound for pound thing kind of screws my brain, because like there's, when you look at what people have actually achieved and how they've achieved it and where they've come from, there's so many more elements that you've got to take into consideration.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I mean, as far as pound for pound at the week, when we saw Charlie and Amanda, it was bonkers.
Yeah, two really good performances, and I'm really excited to see. The thing is, I suppose the question is, who's going to get the next title shot in the lightweight division? I think it should be Charles, personally, being that he's lost it, and then the performance he put in against Benny Hill, he should be able to get another shot. But then you've got the Poirier-Gaethje fight for the BMF, and is that going to determine another contender as well? And then there's always, you know, in a weird world, if McGregor ever fights Chandler, there's always the talks of that, because McGregor's going to be the money fight, and he's going to bring in the most views and
or
everything.
Volk.
Yeah, or Volkanovski, of course, yeah. So, I mean, obviously he's got to fight Yair first.
Yair might win and then go, do you know what?
And
I'll fucking match as well. I think that's the scary thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's ever moving. And I suppose it does come a lot down to who Dana likes a lot.
Because
when you've got Gaethje and Poirier, they're essentially behind Charles all day, because he's beaten the pair. He didn't just eke out a decision. He finished the pair of them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the same way.
I think, like, really, if any, it should be Charles. I think that's the fight to make.
And how do you see him finishing Makhachev if he does it next time?
Oh man, I don't know. I've not really thought about it too much in that sense, but I don't know. I think if anything, it could probably go to a decision this time, maybe. But then again, I'm a bit like, well, Charles isn't really a decision kind of fighter.
No.
And I feel like over the distance, Makhachev would probably get the better of him. So I feel like the only way really he could win, I don't think he's going to be able to sub Makhachev, but I think he could probably knock him out.
Yeah.
So I would like to say, if they did fight again, that Charles would knock him out.
The nice thing is that Charles has now got 25 minutes of footage to watch him against Volk.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because
it's just, it's the thing is as well, because Makhachev subbed Charles Oliveira. Like, it's a big statement. I think Charles is probably smart enough and he's developed his game enough to not get caught that way again.
Yeah.
But again, it's Makhachev, isn't it? He's arguably, you know, the best.
Yeah.
At the moment.
And I think the trouble is, and obviously after studying jiu-jitsu for such a long time, people get subbed all the time.
Mm.
It happens so often. Like the fact that so many people are now getting so much better at defending it, the allowance for a mistake in jiu-jitsu is so fucking small that I don't think, because Charles has been stopped in the octagon before, like I mentioned, Jim Miller, I think he kneeboarded him, or mm-hmm. it was a leg lock, whatever it was, he subbed him. So I don't think that affected Charles as much as maybe some other jiu-jitsu fighters. Like,
wasn't it rear naked? Because didn't he have his like tongue caught between his teeth? Or was that a different fight?
What, when he first subbed Jim Miller?
Yeah.
When Jim Miller subbed Charles?
No, when Charles subbed Jim Miller. When Jim subbed Charles the first time.
I'm sure he dropped for a leg.
Yeah.
But that, because he's had that, I don't know if it would have, I don't know if it affects him that much. He doesn't seem like someone that holds on to shit to me. But he seems like he learns from it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, the thing is, falling into a guillotine or any sort of submission, it's just that split second of whoever's on your back or whoever's got the hold. Anyone can be subbed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be nice for Charles to get that back, to get it back together. Well, there you go, one each now. But you never know, man. It's such a strange place to be because there are so many contenders. And I think because Conor's within that group, it gives it a little bit more lift.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it used to be middleweight with Anderson, or it used to be like heavyweight with John Jones because it was constant and regular and exciting. Whereas now, it floats around this.
Yeah, I mean, saying that though, I kind of brushed over the fact of Conor's recent
allegations.
Yeah.
What the fuck, man?
In it. Like, oh, it's such a, yeah. I don't understand why. Like, he's obviously doing the Ultimate Fight. He's got the opportunity to fight Chandler and then, you know, potentially fighting for the belt, you know, really, because he's in every chance to get that fight. And then just to like totally fucking ruin it, like, or do something like ridiculously.
Well, the thing is, we've seen it before with people that essentially they get really, really famous, or they it's a new life.
Mm.
It's a completely different world. When you go from struggling to then having fuck you money or Joe Rogan money, you get to the point where you're like, it's like you've got a cheat card. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, like, there's probably something that in the back of your mind, you'd maybe like to upgrade your PlayStation, or you may like a new pair of kicks, or you might want a new set of headphones or something that you're working towards. But it's always normal that you're achieving. Whereas when, like, essentially the gloves come out, you can have whatever you want, whenever you want. There's no real accountability or responsibility to do anything or be accountable. Then the world gets fucking really blurred. Mm. So when you get used to everything being focused around you, some people take more and some people shy away. So you look at like someone like Rose, Rose wanted to get out of a fight as soon as she could, out of the event, out of the arena. Mm-hmm. Like her and Pat Barry famously are back at the airport after the event.
Yeah.
She just wants to get home.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't want to be there. Whereas other people, they are just embracing all that. And the problem is, it can be such a toxic environment because you get then your Mayweather sort of crew with all your yes men and all these people that are just constantly trying to exploit you or trying to exploit your name just for money and all the rest of it. And you've got Connor's like obviously acting. He's blown up to be a fucking massive Tom dude.
Doesn't look well.
No, it looks like. And it'd be an interesting documentary that, like, all of a sudden Connor disappears from the limelight for 2 years and comes back and he's like opened a cheese farm or something. He's just relaxing with kids because we've seen it happen.
Yeah.
And before, his entire focus was on fighting. And that can carry you so far because when you're obsessed for 10 years, the next 10 years are easy to remain relatively focused,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the same obsession. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And obviously when you saw Ronda, I mean, she did Fast and the Furious and she was doing bits and bobs. And when you're being pushed and pulled from every different corner, you've not got the same sort of time or focus to be put mm-hmm. into something that's important. I mean, any fighting film or any comeback fighting film, even if you use Rocky, it's always the same message.
Yeah.
Don't get too big for your boots. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Rocky 3.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, Clubber Lang is just there to have a word, isn't he? And he fucking embarrasses him.
Yeah.
And that's the motivation he needs to then get back in the gym. And
yeah. Mickey died though.
Yeah. You got to eat lightning and shit thunder. But it's moments like that, that even though that's not real, I mean, I know obviously it was for Tyson when Cus died just before his fight. But it's things like that that refocus you and re-energize you and give you that sort of drive to go, what the fuck are you doing, man?
Mm.
And there's a lot of, I mean, you'll see rock stars talk about it. You'll see movie stars talk about it. You see so many people that are like, fuck, listen, I can't remember who it was the other day. I think it was Michael Keaton, you know, Batman, the original Batman.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was at a round table with like Tom Hanks and Shia LaBeouf and all these other guys.
Oh, I watched that.
Yeah, it's good, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're having a nice chat and they were like, what's your one piece of advice? And he was like, spend time with your kids.
Mm.
Spend time with your kids, spend time with your family. It's the most important thing. And
because you realise that that's what you're working for. And
completely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is the goal. That is the overall thing always. Because guess what? They're going to be sat next to you at the end.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be holding your hand. They're going to be with you regardless.
Mm-hmm.
They will love you unconditionally. And you can gain fans and lose fans and do this and do that. But ultimately, you're going home to one place.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose the worst thing is, obviously, with the allegations that came from the NFL, the NBA game.
Well, first of all, you freaking put the mascot in A&E, didn't you?
Yeah. So that was kind of brushed off because he hit him and it was a big skit.
Yeah, because it was set up for him to do that.
But then apparently he caught him through the whatever it was. And I saw the thing right up just after that. Yeah, he clipped him, but he's been to see him and everything's fine.
Yeah.
And all the rest of which... Money talks, motherfucker. I mean, he's obviously he's been like, listen, we're not going to go any further. But then the trouble is, it's the whole accusation side of things with a person in that position. Because you'll know people that in the whole Michael Jackson scenario will say, definitely did it.
Mm-hmm.
Worst piece of shit you can find. Then you'll have a whole other half of people that go, what a poor bastard. He did everything in his life. He struggled and he's obviously done all this and blah, blah, blah. And he's lived his life and it's just easy for people to accuse him
because
they know it's easy money. And the problem is, regardless of either of those being true, there is always this section of people that are the scumbags that will exploit fuckers just to take advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And there are the unfortunate victims.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I don't know if it's someone's taking an opportunity to go, oh, he did this.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, fucking hell, man, he's such a high profile and he's a bit unhinged and wired. And obviously it's easy to say, or he is of that position where he thinks he's so untouchable that he can do what he wants to who he wants and when he wants, that now we've got this whole fucking tornado of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying either one is okay or more true than the other, but there's always the two sides.
Yeah, of course.
Which make it even more difficult because, like, if it was just, all right, this is on video. Like, when Dana on New Year slapped his missus, that's on video. And so you're like, holy fucking shit, man. That's crazy.
Mm.
And as much as you can love or hate Dana or have any opinion of whatever you want, he addressed it because it's irrefutable. It's there.
Yeah.
Whereas this is more of a, it's the old school 90s sort of thing where they're like, this happened. But obviously it's been immediately reported. So it's not like it's not like it's going to go away.
Mm.
But then does that strengthen the fact that it might not be real because she's gone straight to the papers? Or does that strengthen the fact that she's more devastated and a strong survivor that's gone, no, he's not going to do that to anyone else. I want to get it out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's, weird situation anyway, yeah.
But what happens with him? So our old mate Paul Daly punched Josh Koscheck after the bell.
Mm.
Yeah, it's the wrong thing to do. Shouldn't have done that. That's bad. Dana stood up. He will never fight in the UFC again. Ever, ever, ever. He's the worst thing. Connor's dodged a few bullets.
Mm-hmm.
Dolly through a window. Kind of acting a bit crazy. He's been out of line with a few things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been kind of like, yeah, well, he does bring us lots of millions.
Yeah. That's the thing, isn't it? It's like,
if anything comes of this.
Whatever news it is, bad news or good news, they still see it as news and it's still money and it's still drawing in attention.
But if he gets convicted of this, do you see Dana being able to justify it or leave him on the books, or is he still part of the UFC?
But it's not his first allegation in this kind of thing, is it?
That's what I'm saying.
So, yeah. Don't know. You can't justify it at all, really. How can you justify it? Even with the idea of him maybe doing it, or pretend, you know, whether it's true or not, there's still allegations against him and for doing something like that. And it's like, you can't justify it in any sense.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
But it's like their position on it is more of one that's making money, not of one that's protecting. Do you know what I mean?
It won't
be like, oh my God, I hope she's okay. It's like, fuck, what's that mean to us? We've got fucking money on this. Like, it's not like they've not made their money off Connor. Connor could walk away tomorrow and they've still had their fucking golden egg. Do you know what I mean? But as we know, rich people like to stay rich and the money is the biggest motivator to them. So is that what's driving them to then go, fuck, we need to, it's more important than we sort this out because obviously we need him. Because like how much they've put into the current Ultimate Fighter and what they're promoting, like it's all towards a Conor McGregor coming back and having a fight.
Yeah.
Fucking scary. Mm-hmm. Really scary, man. And it's like I say, it's not like we can accuse him or deny it. We just don't know. But it's kind of, I think, disappointing more than anything that it's something else negative when he's done so much to like bring a limelight to a sport.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
One thing I was going to mention on 289 just before we moved on.
Yep.
Irene Aldana. Who did she remind you of?
I remember you mentioning this to me and something to do with her uniform.
Her outfit? Just bring Peter Griffin up for me. Or bring Irene Aldana up in a 289 outfit. Just to see. I mean, obviously this was late at night. I'm catching the fights. It's the last one of the night. So, Aldana. Alsana, that's going to be a lion from Lion, Witch of the Wardrobe, isn't it? There she is. Okay. So here, second one in. There you go.
Let's see if we can get a bigger.
Yeah, get a decent sized picture. Or just Google Irene Aldana from 289. And I don't know if it's because the shorts were slightly longer and it was a longer sleeved shirt. But literally, she just reminded me of Peter Griffin. It's exactly the same green and white, isn't it?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You can see it,
can't
you?
I know what you mean, yeah. I understand that they probably did that because it's the colours of Mexico as well.
Oh, yeah, I get it. I was just, as soon as I saw it, I was like, why the fuck's she dressed as Peter Griffin?
Key.
Or, you know, if she'd have been kicked at one point, she just knelt down and was like, for way too long.
Damn, she got like a fair play for being able to last five rounds though, because she absolutely got battered. And I thought she did really well on the ground as well. She never like let her get on top of her. She never like really gave in. Even in the last round, she was still pushing her off.
Mate, she caught her with one punch at the end of the first round. Yeah. I was like, yo.
Yeah, it's just, like, I remember Dan talking about it as well. It was like, once she gets in a cycle, the same as the Holly Holm fight, where she couldn't get past or break down whatever was coming her way. And she just ended up getting in that same cycle. I think she just couldn't find a way to break down or get inside on Nunes. I mean, obviously you are fighting Nunes, but yeah.
I think that sometimes
it's just frustrating to watch, because it's just like, you know, just
do it.
Go for it. Yeah. Go for it. You're already losing. You might as well just fucking go for it.
Yeah, mate. I suppose it's one of them where even if you punch a heavy bag for 3 minutes, if I then say to you, now run upstairs and run down again, you'd be like, fuck off.
I know,
off.
Yeah. I know.
It's
easy for you to view it and say that, of course.
Always. Yeah. But I think even she would have got back afterwards and gone, yeah, probably let that one go. But we've seen it a million times. Do you know what I mean? And obviously, it's the making of the fight and then see what happens next. And obviously, her against Juliana Pena could be the biggest barn burner we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Or not. You never know. And I think if it was essentially Amanda Nunes sitting at the top of the pile again, going, all right, I'm still here, line up again, I just think we get the same results. And she carries on being an absolute savage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was only that. And just, if you lot thought that she looked like Peter Griffin, or if it was just me, or if you wanted to see her come out dressed as a chicken, I don't know.
Or fight a chicken.
Imagine if Amanda Nunes came out and it wasn't like a lion head, it was a chicken. And she, I don't know. It's a weird theory.
It was a good event. I mean, even just to mention as well before we move on, because I started watching it on, because I actually stayed up and watched the main card.
Oh, shit.
And all the fights on the main card, I think the first one was Barry Oanders, which was great. And then, is it Danny Ige, Nate Landwehr?
Yeah.
That was really, really good performance from Danny Ige.
And Landwehr to survive.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And then what was the other one? Oh, Mike Malott.
Malott.
Yeah, who looked really good. Yeah. Against
Fuck it.
Yeah. That was a really good performance from him. Like Canada had a really good night. Was it 6 out of 6? I think
they smashed it, mate. Yeah, they absolutely smashed it.
But yeah, it was a cool event. Really good event. Yeah,
it was good. And then this was last week. Well, this week just gone.
Yeah. So I have actually only watched the main event. I've only watched Jared Cannonier and Marlon Vittori. I haven't had a chance to catch up on the rest of it yet. But what a performance from Jared,
mate!
Like, absolutely. Well, of course, he broke the record for most strikes landed in middleweight history. Props to Vittori to be able to... to be honest, I think the second round and maybe the third, I felt like it probably could have got stopped at a certain point.
Yeah.
And, you know, old Herb Dean probably didn't see it the same. But there was a point in the second round where, like, he was getting pieced up, like, proper.
Undefended.
And he wasn't stable.
No.
He wasn't really, you can argue that he wasn't really defending himself intelligently. Like, it could have been stopped, in my opinion. But props to him for going all five rounds and even, you know, fighting back towards the latter end of the fight. But, yeah, Jared looked great. Looked really, really good. He's 39 as well.
Yes, and this is what I was about to say. I'm 42. Fuck that. Fuck that. Like, he's fucking stacked out in the first place. And I mean, to be fair, I think was Marvin 2 and he was 3 in the rankings.
No.
Because Bobby Knuckles is 1, isn't he?
Wasn't it 3 and 4?
Or might be 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, Marvin's higher than Jared.
Yeah.
And I was like, watching him. I mean, obviously, Marvin caught him a couple of times.
First round.
Okay.
It's like, oh, shit, yeah.
And it's not like he's known as a finisher.
Yeah.
He's known as a tough, durable motherfucker, but he's not known as a finisher. So then when he started clipping Jared, I was like, this ain't the fucking script.
Yeah.
And especially for saying how, when Jared fought Izzy, it was a lot more reserved.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's just based on what's coming back at you, though. Like,
maybe.
I think if you're a striker like Jared Cannonier, who kind of stalks people down and puts that kind of like output on someone who is a better striker than you,
yeah,
you're going to be a little bit more reluctant.
A bit more of a sniper.
Yeah. Because, you know, if you do, like, oh, he did get caught a couple of times with Vittori, and Vittori's not known for his striking, you know, to put that same kind of output on someone like Adesanya, you're not going to get the same results, I don't think.
But then look at what, when Pereira put that on Adesanya at the end of the fifth.
True.
It makes a difference. True. The thing is, if Izzy gets used to people waiting, that becomes part of his game.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's put a lot of work in to make this resume, to then, for people to research him or look at him and think, I can't do that. I can't do this. So their game plan is then hindered by what they can do, because obviously they're scared about what Izzy can also do. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you look at, like, when Jared starts putting it on someone, there was a couple of combos that it was just like, holy, yeah. Like anyone else, 9 out of 10 would have dropped.
Yeah. And the highlights, man, like watching them back, like fucking hell, like anyone else, like,
mate,
would have been out.
And clean. And I don't know if it was the cage that kept him up. I don't know if it was just, I don't know. Like, the fact that he used to be heavyweight, he's still packing a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the fuck are you going to have to do to take Vittori out of there?
The thing is, though, I was surprised that Vittori, you know, especially after the second round, didn't kind of revert to his, like, wrestling and, you know, attempt to take downs. Like, I don't even know how many takedowns he attempted, but he didn't seem like that was his, like, priority.
No, but then when you look at when he fought Brunson, and it was a bit more of a scramble, and Brunson ended up on his back, and Jared Cannonier's ground and pound is pretty fucking savage.
Yeah, and his takedown defense is pretty good as well.
Exactly. So you're going to waste energy trying to get there, and the chances are there's a couple of times he reversed him.
Yeah.
And looked effortless, because obviously since he's made weight, he's then rehydrated.
Yeah.
And obviously, I mean, he's just built like a fucking action man.
Dude is actually a sick. I think it was the fourth or the fifth round where Jared Cannonier slipped Vittori's punch and just went straight for a takedown, took him down straight there. It was slick. It was such a good move. But, like, Jared looked great in all aspects of the fight. And it'd be interesting to see what happens next. I could maybe see, like, you know, obviously Whittaker, Duplessis are going to be fighting on 291, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, if Whittaker, whoever wins that fight, maybe they could do Cannonier, winner of that, to get the next title shot.
I mean, obviously Cannonier's already fought him, hasn't he? So
But Whittaker's already fought him 3 times now, is it 3?
Who?
No. Is it?
So,
oh, you mean Cannonier's already Cannonier fought Whittaker? Yeah.
Which, again, he was a bit more reserved, which... quite like this Cannonier, this one where it's like, I'm getting hit, so you're gonna have one back.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it worked for him. But is Duplessis the changing of the guard? Has he fought high enough competition, and has he done enough that, obviously at the minute, we know what Cannonier looks like against Izzy, we know what Vittori looks like against Izzy, we know what Bobby Knuckles looks like against Izzy. Duplessis, we don't know.
Mm-hmm. So, and there's a lot of like back cut, you know.
There's a bit of bad blood.
Yeah.
A little bit of bite in there. Mm-hmm. And does that mean that's going to sell more? Because obviously if it was an Australian card and you got Bobby Knuckles against Izzy all day, that's massive. But it's the unknown element of Duplessis. Like, I'm not saying he's not good enough. I'm not saying he's not too good. I don't know. He's just, obviously he's winning and he's doing well. Like, if he gets past Bobby Knuckles, surely it's his for the next fight, because obviously these guys have already had a go, and as much as they've fought again and they're getting their way back there, I think for me it could be anyone. But the fact that he's beat Bobby Knuckles and obviously he's got the next fight is, well, I don't know, like, to beat Rob Whittaker is fucking impressive.
Personally, I can't see Duplessis beating Whittaker.
I can't, but I'd be excited if he did.
Because I think really in the division, in the current middleweight standings, I feel like Whittaker's probably, in my opinion, the second best fighter after Izzy.
Yeah.
I feel like if they fought again, he's probably going to give him the best fight with the most highest chance of winning.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Rob's run, when he had his run, and how good he was mm-hmm. just remarkable. Yeah. For saying that he came from Ultimate Fighter and he sort of rose the ranks with that quite stealthily.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously he was on a few people's radar, but then when he actually got there and it was like, holy shit, this guy's fucking legit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was impressive. Mm-hmm. But if you just bring the card back, there's a couple of standouts. If you get a chance to watch. So, I mean, Arman Tsarukyan, it's a great fight.
Yeah.
They both get clipped. Really good. Really, really good. Pat Sabatini, definitely one to watch. Holy fucking shit. He ragdolled Lucas Almeida and it was really, really impressive. Like, Lucas didn't even get the chance to start. He basically was, he was on him like a limpet.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically was like, here you go, this is what's going to happen. So yeah, he did whatever he wanted. And props to Christian Leroy Duncan. His first fight out, obviously.
Yeah, the injury.
There was an injury.
Yeah.
So he reminded me so much of, you remember when Michelle Pereira came out doing cartwheels and spinning backflips and shit? It was like that, cross between that and a Johnny Walker early fight.
Right.
He was spinning and like, if one of them or half of one of them would have landed, it would have been spectacular. But I'd be interested to see what happens next because he's been undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
So we've spoke about this before, whereas it's a heavy hat to wear because obviously you're in the top of the tree now. This is where you're probably going to lose if you're going to lose. So it'd be interesting to see. We saw him come out quite careful. It was UFC London, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then now we've seen him come out all flashy and he's got Mark Weir in his corner.
Yeah.
And Mark Weir's an OG fucking legend, man. Mm-hmm. He's a proper old school mixed martial artist. So I can't imagine it was his plan to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, he's got to let him be himself.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll be excited to see him fight again, see what he brings next time, because obviously he's had two goes and it's been two kind of different outcomes.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But no, he's got a lot to offer. And the only other one was, Manuel Torres' elbow was devastating.
Yeah.
And Nicholas Dalby looked fucking, he looked like a killer.
Yeah, I saw Dalby won again. He's on a 3-fight win streak now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he gets next in the welterweight division. But yeah, I'm gonna check the rest of the card out because I've seen so many people saying that it was a really good card and like they enjoyed it a lot. So yeah, I'm going to watch the rest of the fights.
Yeah, it was decent, man. Yeah. It was good. I enjoyed it because there was that and there was Bellator that was on, which Bellator always feels just weird. It's on iPlayer, isn't it? And it's,
yeah.
I don't know. I think there's so many bits that could be a little bit better. It's not like I don't enjoy watching it, but there was Pitbull against Sergio Pettis, which was reasonable, but Pitbull didn't see him himself, but he's already got two belts and he was dropping down for a third.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he dropped 10 pounds. So he didn't seem the same unhinged, savage motherfucker as normal. And Pettis kind of took advantage and acted like a champion, fought like a champion and retained the belt. So that was impressive. And then Yoel Romero.
I've only saw like Instagram reels of this, but he was like kind of, what was he doing? Was he like playing,
like
playing
capoeira. Possum? Yeah, I don't know, man.
But like he was like kind of like drunk almost, like like trying to like lure Nemkov in, I imagine.
Yeah, and then like walking backwards a bit and just, there's a couple of, to be fair, he caught him a couple of times, but he was being dominated.
Mm.
But I think just Nemkov, he had the respect for, there might be that power coming and who he's fighting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I think at one point, the UFC had a stamp to say, we got the best throughout every division.
Mm-hmm.
If ours fight yours, ours win.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think Nemkov fares pretty well in the UFC.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think he comes...
It's that light heavyweight, yeah.
Jesus, yeah. I think he comes in and he's like, you guys are the best? I'll keep my belt.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be a tough fight for Jamal. I'm not saying he'd lose. I'm not saying he'd win. I just, when it was John Jones, bring anyone.
Yeah.
It's not going to make a difference. Now, it's a big question mark.
Yeah, like Nemkov, Jamal Hill, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
Yeah, Nemkov's like sick. I've seen him fight a few times and Yeah, like, so, like, he's not good. He's too smart and too intelligent to fall, especially against Yoel Romero. Like you said, he knows that Yoel Romero's got the power. He's got the experience, and, like, he fought very intelligently not to fall into that trap.
Yeah.
But yeah, it goes back to this, like, it would be cool to see, like, the whole crossover thing just between divisions. And obviously, we kind of got a glimpse of what could maybe be at the PFL as well.
Yes.
With Ngannou and Jones.
Yeah.
Kind of meeting up face to face. That was quite interesting.
Which I kind of liked. I like that. Yeah. And they kept it respectful.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was enough. I mean, obviously, it's weird because Ngannou's in his new home, surrounded by his new people. He's got Ray Sefo stood there grinning like a Cheshire cat. And I mean, I don't know how Dana reacts to that sort of stuff, because obviously he puts on this front of like, well, I'm not bothered. When really it's like, you probably are bothered a bit. I mean, the fact that John Jones is in a PFL shirt, obviously fighters support their colleagues and their other friends and all the rest of it. So like, you'll see different fighters from certain organisations all over the place. And at first it was weird. Do you know what I mean? Like when you'd see, I don't know, Jimmy fighting in Bellator with Dan in his corner with a Bellator shirt on when he works for the UFC. It's weird, but it happens and it's just one of those things. But I don't know.
It's probably the only sport where it does happen, right?
Well, maybe.
Like, you wouldn't see, I don't know, like, I'm trying to think of a footballer now. The Kevin De Bruyne, like, in a Man United shirt or anything like that.
What, in their corner?
Yeah, like, on the sideline.
Start dribbling better. Yeah. Why are you shit? Maybe, I don't know, man. I think it was always a weird one. I know when Randy was in the UK and we had him over for a book signing and a meet and greet and stuff, and we'd spent the day with him, and he was going to Bama or something like that. And, like, I think someone said, will you wear this shirt? And he was like, I can't wear that, but I can wear this. And, like, he had lots of contractual agreements in certain elements. And it kind of blew my mind. I was like, well, hold on a minute. Like, at the time, he'd just fought, well, not long after James Toney. I think he'd already fought Lyoto. But, even in the meeting when we were sat having a meal, he was like, yeah, I'd entertain maybe a few, like, circus fights, like James Toney, but not really, after he obviously lost his tooth from, what's his name, Lyoto Machida, then obviously it all went a bit different. But he was, he could do some things and couldn't do others, whereas now it seems, regardless, like, even if there's bad blood, you've got, I mean, Nick Diaz cornering Nate sometimes, or, I don't know, it's like, they've just got to be there. Like, when
pushed aside for...
Or Dan cornered Veronica, and it's one of them where, look, shit still happens. This is my coach. So yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I don't know if we ever see it.
It's funny because what Ngannou said, didn't he say, like, oh, you're over there, I'm over here, maybe we could meet in the middle.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that could lead to potentially, but I noticed that Ngannou made Jones not that imposing, you know, like when they were face to face.
Yeah,
similar height obviously, but just in terms of build, like, Ngannou kind of made Jones look like a skinny, like, heavyweight who would
ate a
few hamburgers.
I think when you see them both independently, it's always a different thing than when you see it's like when Tyson,
like, a
Fury,
true heavyweight,
yeah, it's like when you see Tyson Fury with Ngannou, you're like, oh, he's not a monster. But then when you see me against Ngannou, you're like, oh, he's a fucking Jolly Green Giant. He's fucking huge.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's a weird one. And I mean, obviously, I know that it was in the news that, was it PFL were looking for Bellator or something like that? That was in, Dana was talking about it. And I just don't know if that happens. I don't know if Dana's the type of person that sits back and goes, I've got the money for that in the ashtray in my car. Should we just buy it? Just to be a fucker. I wouldn't be surprised. But if they don't...
It does reduce the competition, do you not think? Instead of two other major promotions competing with the UFC, it would just be one.
See, I love two or three. I love more. And like I was saying, Bellator, there's something about it. I just don't know what that is. And I don't know if it's just because I've been so attuned to UFC every week being the same thing, similar product, getting my embedded, getting a bit of a press conference, getting all the rest of it. And it's constant every week. I know what I'm getting. Whereas Bellator, it's almost like, holy shit, there was a Bellator on last night.
Yeah.
I might grab it. Mm-hmm. And it's not, it's because I've not had it fed to me. So I don't know, there's a lot to be learned, but I don't know what PFL buying Bellator looks like. And I don't know if they keep Bellator or if they just make it all one big thing, which is essentially the MMA league we were talking about the other day, and they just
I can imagine that it. That is probably what, like, I mean, that's what they would probably be intending to do, is kind of absorb their fighters. And I don't know, maybe they could just, maybe they could like have a Bellator league or something within it.
Yeah, because Bellator are doing one with Rising, aren't they?
Right, okay.
Like a cross promotion.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It could be like an agreement where they do like a cross promotion thing where Bellator versus PFL kind of thing, or it just entirely gets absorbed by PFL and they, all those fighters just go into the, to broaden the roster of the PFL, which...
You never really seem to get a true response from Dana. Like with Scott Coker, it always feels a little bit more quite open. Mm. It was like, yeah, we'll talk to these guys, talk to them guys, and yeah, there's a potential that we're going to be doing this, or they're going to be buying that. And it's like, okay. Dana always seems like a scorned partner. And he's like, oh, so you're telling me one company that can't sell tickets and puts on no events is going to buy another company that can't sell ticket and put on no events? Like, come on, man. Like, don't be that guy.
Yeah.
You don't have to be that guy.
You're in it together. It's the sport. You know?
Yeah, you bought Pride and Strikeforce and WEC. Like, it's not like you've not fucking whole-IO'd the fucking competition in the past and just sucked them in. Like, I don't know. I think
it's just a level of arrogance that the UFC is still the staple of MMA, which, you know, it is, I guess.
Yeah,
it is. But why kind of put down the other?
Yeah,
you know, it's growing the sport together. It's a collective thing, really.
Yeah, I don't think it'll happen. I mean, maybe the Bellator, the PFL thing. I'd honestly think. Of how Dana is, I wouldn't be surprised if he was like, oh no, well, 300 million, I'll give you 500 million.
Yeah.
Because to them, it's not like he's not got some folding stuff. He's got fucking plenty. But then if he does buy Bellator, he's got all the fighters that he's cut.
Yeah.
So does he put a secondary league in place and it's like a different, do you know what I mean? Or do they just absorb the whole thing like they did with the WEC and Strikeforce?
Mm-hmm.
Which wouldn't be a problem. It wouldn't be a bad thing. I don't know. It's... Yeah, it's interesting, man. I'm just not sure what we're going to see. And obviously, to have John Jones and to have Ngannou there together was super exciting for a second. But you think to yourself, what's the fucking chances?
Mm-hmm.
I say actual chances. It's not really... It's just two people facing off. It's like...
Yeah, yeah.
They had a chance. The deal couldn't get done. Now there's worlds apart. It's definitely not going to get done.
Mm-hmm.
So... I don't know. I quite like seeing it. And I think the most exciting bit was Ray Sefo's face stood behind him. Just how excited he was.
Yeah.
He was fucking buzzing.
Just like dollar signs in his eyes.
Mate, he just looked so happy. It was so nice because he was like, it's happening at my place.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
the party
true,
was
yeah.
at his house instead yeah. of being anywhere else.
No, it's good. I really enjoyed PFL card last week as well. Did you watch it the previous week? You saw Brendan Loughnane.
Yeah, I saw Brendan lose.
Yeah.
And I felt for him.
Mm.
But acted like such a champ.
Yeah.
Like literally was that cool.
I like the behind the scenes stuff they've been doing at PFL. A little bit like they used to do, well, I don't know if they still do it, but I haven't seen it in a while, The Thrill and the Agony.
Yeah, that was...
They used to do at the UFC. But because there was one at the weekend, one after the last card with Maurice Greene and Ante De Gea. And yeah, it's just like, it's really like, it kind of puts into perspective like what they go through and what the result is based on, you know, the judging and stuff like that. Because Maurice Greene was super in bits about, you know, having to ring his son afterwards and telling him he lost. And
it was
powerful stuff.
You get so much more truth after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Like leading into the fight, it's not only you trying to convince everyone else, sometimes you're trying to convince yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that level of of fuckery when you are a professional fighter. And I mean, Cowboy talked about it all the time and said how hard it was to actually get out to the cage. But he always turned on a sort of bravado or a character. And obviously, every week leading up to the fights, you always get a little bit of aggro and all the rest of it. And you might get 30 seconds on the mic afterwards when they're like, oh, yeah, well, massive thanks to this guy that I've been calling a prick for 3 weeks. But they mean it. Whereas the thrill and agony, or those videos from the PFL, will always show you what really matters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it's his kid, it's his life, it's his legacy, and it's like when we saw Kai Kara Francis the week lose a decision.
Yeah.
The fucking impact. And oftentimes when Dana sees that and acknowledges that, you'll see him with them afterwards and go, listen, we've got you, we'll look after you or whatever. And I think as a long-time fan and a diehard of the sport, it always makes you feel a little bit better because they've entertained me, massively entertained me. Obviously, you pay your subscription or whatever, but it's not like it goes towards anything else. So you'd like to think who is in power needs to use their power for good for this. And obviously, when you got the thrill and the agony and people looking after them, or someone who's worried that they've now lost three in a row and fucking hell, what does that mean? And they're like, listen, don't worry, we've still got you, we'll look after you. It's always good to know or see behind the curtain.
Like, yeah.
I don't want to be in a dressing room after a football match. That doesn't bother me. But
they did it with the Amazon Prime series. I think that was that an Amazon Disney? I don't know. But they did it with Spurs. They did it with Sunderland. And they did it with Man City. And it was like an insight into like the behind the scenes, like the whole operations that goes on, like buying players, like players feeling certain ways about how they were being put into the team, stuff like that. And it kind of opened up your eyes to like what actually goes on, like the manager's role, the players, like, you know, behind just playing, like how they deal with injuries. And it, like, I really like that because it just gives you a really in-depth insight into like their lives and, you know, the consequences of decisions.
It's the best bit. It humanizes people, right?
Yeah. And like, but then you had like the one with Sunderland where it was like they got relegated, and it was like the whole city, the whole town having to, you know, it's like a big thing, especially up north, like massive team. And it affects like the whole city. And then you got the kind of on the other end of the perspective, was Man City, where they like won the league and it was like super, like, you know, like what goes into actually accomplishing that kind of thing. But yeah, it's just super cool seeing it from that angle.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's got a very much more of a prevalent spot within something like MMA.
Yeah.
And because it's much more of an individual sport as well.
Yeah. And I think that's where the social's been used for good. I know we spoke about it in the past where it's like, it just seems endless that you're getting results and other bits. But when you see, even if you're following a fighter personally and just seeing their journey, it's wicked. It's like ever since, like when we met Michael Chiesa in Vegas, I was in touch with him for a bit and we sent him some gear and we were backwards and forwards chatting and then mystery interviewed him. Then you see him get married and stuff and you're like, fucking, and it's not necessarily about who you're fighting next or whatever. It's more like, fucking hell, man, I hope you had a good time. And it's just, when you can humanize something, it feels like a much more genuine connect that like you're invested in that person. And you want them to do well. Yeah, it's weird, but it's used for the right purpose. I think the thrill of the agony is always one of the most interesting, just to see what's next.
Yeah,
because once the fight's done, that's why I've always been jealous of like Match of the Day, because Match of the Day has been around forever and it kind of breaks everything down and it's got everything you're interested in. Whereas there isn't really a Match of the Day for MMA.
No.
Do you know what I mean? I know you get a bit of aerial or you get a bit of certain fighters, but it's never like everything broken down.
Yeah, but that's also from a media standpoint as well, where it's a lot more based off like opinion and like, you know, it's kind of, they feed off the controversy of it a little bit and it, like, they don't necessarily look at the fights, break it down analytically, you know, like what someone like Dan does. Yeah, I feel like you said, that even online, there's not really anything that kind of offers you that, like a look back at the fights and a breakdown, like allows people to understand the sport better.
Yeah.
and like why decisions were made, why decisions weren't made. Well, there's definitely room for it, you know, like a, I mean, they do have like the breakdown show after the event or anything, but you know, no one's going to, well, especially us, like we're already up till like 5 a.m. watching it. Yeah. We're not going to stay up another 2 hours to watch it.
And they're all part of that company.
Yeah.
So I know that Gary Lineker's part of BBC or ITV, whichever one it is. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's partly done, but it's like, if you had a show that is showing you all Bellator, all PFL, all Cage Warriors, all UFC, and it's just basically going through, right. And even if they had boards, like what's the standings for UFC and who's next? What's happening after Patrico Pitbull lost to Sergio, and what's happening with Brendan? How many wins has he got to get back? And it's like, it keeps it all relevant and it keeps it all the same thing. Because even though it's different companies, it's the same shit.
Yeah.
And once, if Brendan gets released and wants to fight with Bellator, wants to go UFC or whatever happens, you still follow them.
Yeah.
So it's all about the person, not necessarily about the actual company.
Yeah. I think it, like I was saying, like the post fight stuff now that you see, it's always built around the drama as well, and like, you know, the stuff that happens outside of the cage. And like on Match of the Day, you never see Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer talk about, I don't know,
Ronaldo was pissed up in a taxi cab.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, to see it and kind of comprehend it as a sport, you have to take that element out of it to really like, you know, just focus on the sport and the performances of the fighters.
Yeah. I mean, I love the headlines because it's something that you don't always see.
It's a new sport, and that's just
talent. But at the same time, like you say, it's not, I don't know, man. I love and hate it both at the same time sometimes because it's like with the whole thing, like with Conor coming up and other things happening, you're just like Michael Chandler came on and said, USADA's just knocked on my door. They want me to be in the testing pool, and Conor's still not in the pool, and he's meant to fight in December. You're like, what the fuck's happening? Like, we're behind the curtain, but we're behind the curtain 10%.
Yeah.
So we're not, it's not like they've had a press conference and gone, seeing as all the controversies that's in the air, we're going to scrap that fight because we don't know what's going to happen. So we're going to do this, this, and this. And Michael Chandler now fights Charles Oliveira again, or Benil Dariush, whatever it is. It's all, you just like kind of left to
wonder,
wait to hear Dana's truth. And that's always the weird one because it's, well, as we know, it's not always the truth. So yeah, I don't know. I don't think it'll ever change. I don't think it'll ever really happen. I don't think we'll have a match of the day, but I kind of wish we did.
Oh, yeah. I wonder what they'd call it.
Clash of the Day.
Who would host it?
Who would? Oh, mate, I can't say.
Dan could be the Alan Shearer.
Got Dan as Alan Shearer.
Wait, who could be the Gary Lineker of MMA?
Well, I'd probably offend too many people by not choosing them, so I'm not going to choose anyone. We just got Dan sat on his own.
Fair enough. Yeah, true.
But yeah, it's something I want just as a whole round. I mean, like, you know, I won't watch any results until I've seen the fight, but then I want to know, sometimes I'll have watched it and I'll have interpreted something a certain way and be like, holy shit, did you see fucking such and such kicks or whatever? And it's like,
Okay, maybe
not against this fighter, but another guy that could be. Devastating.
I go back to it. It's like, you know, when I'm talking to my mates about like a football match, and it's like, oh, did you see like Ronaldo's goal? That was sick or whatever. And then when I talk about MMA, it's like, oh, did you hear about like John Jones getting pissed up and running over it? You know what I mean? There's just, you know, there's focus on, I mean, obviously it would still make headlines regardless, but it's just, it just seems heavily focused on the stuff that happens outside of the, rather than the stuff that happens in.
The way I suppose I've always liked it since, like, there was a fight on The Ultimate Fighter, and it was Caleb Starnes against Nate Quarry. And Nate Quarry started doing this, like, weird, walking away from him, and Caleb wouldn't engage. And Caleb was then arguing with his own corner, basically talking to him. And I was like, that had me hooked, because the fight that was happening was like a really weird, like, dance ritual fucking, not fucking right. And I think most other sports would cover it up. And they wouldn't say. And Joe Rogan was like, he's just told his corner to go fuck themselves. And I was like, yo, why? Oh, they're falling out because of this, this, and this. I was like, holy shit. I love this sport. And that, so I can't take it completely away because I like to, yeah, I like no, to I know the you, controversy. Yeah. But the problem is
I think there's,
I
just
want some of the other little bits as well.
Yeah. This is like with the nature of the sport, there's always, there's controversial characters within it. Even the fighters, there's all, you know, there's probably going to be a lot more drama within this sport because of just the nature of it than it is in any other.
Yeah, like, of course.
You don't get it with boxing, really, do you? Like,
not the same. No, no. And I think this is because the fucking momentum is every week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
They've got Dana sat in front of them every week, so they grill him every week. And like, sometimes there's positives, other times. And then whenever Connor's in the mix, either about controversy or a fight or USADA or Ultimate Fighter, then they're just fucking grilling him, which is, must be difficult because like you've just seen, I don't know, Josh Emmett spark out Ilia Topuria and they want to know what's happening with Connor's dentist. And you're like, what the fuck, man? Like, come on. So because I think it's always on the road and it never loses momentum, that's why it's in our feed so much. Because there could be something that happens at Bellator or in boxing, but you don't see it as much because it's not, it's like on a week off or a, like a month off.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, I get you. Yeah.
So I don't know. I think they become their own worst enemy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But they kind of, they handle it well. They handle it like they always have. So that's what I was talking about with Dana's Truth. It's just one of them that he's going to get that first question, he's going to answer it, and then that's it. So we'll see.
But going back to what you just said, Josh Emmett knocking out Topuria, is that what you think? What do you think of that fight this weekend?
I'm really looking forward to it. I fucking love Josh Emmett. He's
a beast. Everyone put the war room up the other day, and everyone's saying he looks like a goblin.
Yeah, orc.
Yeah,
goblin.
You see that? I guess, yeah, in a sense.
He's just really pale. He's really, really pale. I don't know if he was ginger when he was a kid or what, but he
like
looked
like the white orc out of The Hobbit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe he should come out painted like a white orc. But I think because, I mean, he's 39? 38. And obviously, you'll see it in all professional wrestlers and stuff. Like, their chest kind of separates a bit. But he kept himself in really good shape.
He's fucking stacked. He's a, like, beast.
That's the thing. So he's maintained that physique, but it's in an older frame. And I suppose with him being quite pale, and he's got like that weird tiki, super vibrant, colourful tattoo.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I've just always admired him. And like, obviously, I think he was brought up by a single mom and his brother was in juvie and prison and a lot of problems. And if you put a tie on him and put him in like an IT firm, he wouldn't look out of place.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's Joe Lowe's on, but he wouldn't be like, have you won 15 UFC fights? Be like, yeah, fucking smashed him. Do you know what I mean? It's just his demeanor. So I've always loved watching him. And when he knocked out Johnson, I was like,
Jesus Christ,
fuck,
yeah,
man. He took him to the shadow realm. So obviously it was disappointing for him to lose the title fight last, but there's something in that fucking right hand.
Yeah.
And the left.
It's surprising though, because like, you, based on those fights, who else did he finish as well? In a similar way.
Burgos?
Was that a decision? Anyway, but going off those finishes and those, like that power that he's got, he's actually not got that many knockouts.
No.
I think he's only got 6 knockouts. I only know this because I did the war room. So the stats are still like fresh in my brain. But I think he had 6 knockouts, 2 submissions, which were before the UFC, and then 10 decisions.
Yeah.
Which you'd be surprised because of obviously the way he's been able to knock people out in the past. You'd think he'd be able to land that right hand a little bit more.
It's
but
when it does land flush.
Yeah.
Then they're the ones you get. But I mean, obviously, the graphics we put up the other day. So his last 5, lost to Yair Rodriguez, beat Calvin Kattar, Danny Ige, Shane Burgos, and Michael Johnson. At which all 4 of them have been floating around a title ish picture at one point or another. Maybe not Michael Johnson, but I mean, he won the did he win the Ultimate Fighter? No. No, he lost. He lost the Ultimate Fighter, didn't he? To what's his name with the dreads? I can't remember his fucking name. But he should have won the Ultimate Fighter, but he didn't. But he put on solid performance. I mean, he knocked Poirier out.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's a slouch. Mm-hmm. So he's been up there. So yeah, maybe he has had a title contention. Whereas to Poirier's last fight of Bryce Mitchell, which was well impressive. Because Bryce was fucking, he was on a roll.
Yeah.
Jai Herbert, Ryan Hall, Damon Jackson, and Yusef Zalal. I can't read my own writing. Zalal.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's that thing of the new blood and the old guard. Mm. What do you take? And he seems to be shrouded in Paddy Pimblett all the time.
Yeah, obviously they had a bit of a dispute at the last UFC London, was it? Or
not the last one before.
Yeah.
But to me that was like, all right. Mm. But it still seems like that's the whole thing that's being brought up. And I don't know how I'd see that fight playing out. I mean, I'd be interested to see how he manages against someone like Josh Emmett. Mm-hmm. If he beats Josh Emmett, then holy shit, man. Like, that's a ranking and you're fighting top end.
Yeah, I think Topuria is ranked number 9 at the minute and Emmett's 4 or 5.
Yeah, well, he's just had that title shot.
Yeah, yeah. So I feel like if Topuria, surely he's just going to be a swap or whatever, it'll go just above him. But yeah, like if he beats Josh Emmett, he's really in the talks then for, you know, title. And like he's been impressive. Like every fight I've watched him in, like I saw the finish of Ryan Hall the other day, like just
filth.
Like Ryan Hall, man, like what were you doing? Like,
what are you doing, Ryan? I'm just perfecting my face.
Just that man, savage. But and then his knockout against Jai, and you know before that knockout, he did feel like he was kind of coming through a bit of controversy in that fight. So yeah, I'm pretty hot on Ilia Topuria, to be honest.
Is that what you're taking?
Think so.
Well, I'll take Josh just to be the opposite. But yeah. I think Josh has still got something left in the tank.
Mm.
And obviously he's up there for a reason. I'm not saying he overlooked his last fight, but he always performs.
Mm.
I mean, he got caught, yeah, but this is refocused Josh. I'm just thinking, fingers crossed, you never know. He might get the win, but if he does, then he can wait for the Volk fight and see what happens. But
yeah
he's still not completely closed the door on having a title.
No.
Which would be interesting.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's a good card, man. Have you seen the card?
Yeah, I had a little look at it. Yeah, so Ribas, Barber, co-main. Taffer, Lane. Yeah, there's a lot of fights on it, 14 fights on it, I think, with the potential of a couple of them dropping out. But yeah, it's a really good fight, really good card this weekend. Neil Magny as well, headlining the prelims against Phil Rowe. That would be a good one. It's like two identical people, like in terms of build and stature.
You gotta love Neil Magny, man.
Yeah, Neil Magny's great. Legend. Brendan Allen, Bruno Silva, that would be a good fight. Yeah, there's some wicked fights on this card.
And where is it? Does it say?
So it is in Jacksonville.
Nice. So got a crowd.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah.
I do appreciate a crowd.
Jacksonville, Florida.
Yeah. Jackson Wink.
Yeah.
Which is not in Florida.
Yeah. Where's it? Albuquerque.
Yeah. Yeah. New Mexico.
But should be a good card, man. Yeah.
Well, let us know your thoughts. Let us know what you think. If you think it's going to be the old guard or the new blood, let us know who you think is going to take it. And if that means it's an immediate title shot or if it's just climbing the ranks, who's next?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
What else you got for me?
I think that, I was going to mention, like slightly off the topic of MMA, but if you've been watching the new Black Mirror series.
Yes.
Yes.
And watched them all.
Yeah. I've not watched them all yet. I've watched the first three, and the first three are wicked. Like I watched.
So there's the Loch Ness one, right?
The first one was oh my God, thingy is awful.
Yes, Nora. Not Nora. What's her name? Joan.
Is it Joan? Joan is awful.
Joan is awful. Yeah. Get her out of Schitt's Creek.
I just like the... It really taps into, like, the possibilities
of conspiracy theories of insanity.
Yeah, but it's, like, using the stuff that we... You know, like, the Netflix... Like, having a Netflix series made about you.
Yeah.
Like, it's just such an interesting concept. Like,
I suppose we can't say too much either, because you may not have watched
it. Yeah, true. Yeah. Sorry for the spoilers, but... If you haven't watched it and you have watched like previous seasons, or even if you haven't, it's really fucking good.
I think it's every time, and I've watched all six, and I've kind of felt similar each time I've watched any series. There are some that stand out like fuck, like holy shit, that's the best thing I've seen. And then other ones I'm like, he was a bottle of lemonade all along. What the fuck?
Mate, the second episode is probably my favourite, the Lock Henry one.
That was gold.
That was like gold. Because it was like, you weren't expecting that whatsoever.
No, and I think...
that. Because it was, the episode was quite slow, I guess. Not slow, but it took a while to kind of paint a picture of what they were doing and everything. And then within like...
They'd put you
five
into
5 seconds. You were like, "Oh shit!" Yeah,
but they'd put you into their momentum.
Yeah.
So like the Joan is awful one was quite high paced, and you were like, not heart racing, but you're like, "Oh shit!" Mm. Whereas this one was a lot more. You're in the countryside, nice and relaxed. It was a bit eerie, like
kind of creepy, man.
Creepy, yeah. But that uncomfortable. It's not like It or Freddy Krueger or some shit like that, but it was like, because it was real, or it could have been real, it makes you feel that uncomfortableness that you feel, and you're like, oh,
yeah,
I won't go now, what the fuck. But what I found that we've done more than anything is, because it's a new series and obviously it's gaining in popularity, I know it's season six, but it's more a case of, what's he been in? What's she been in?
Yeah, what's he been in?
And it's like, there was... So in that lock one, there's Pod from Game of Thrones. That's his mate in the bar.
Yeah. Oh, that's what he's from. Yeah. Shit. Yeah, I was trying to think.
And then...
I was like, yeah.
There's someone in there. There was a... you know that documentary that was about the man, his wife and the canoe, where he basically faked his death?
Oh, yeah.
She was in that.
Yeah.
And then there's obviously Salma Hayek that was in the first one, and what's her name from Schitt's Creek.
Yeah.
So it's one of them where I just sit there going... Have I seen him before?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
In the third one that I've actually not finished it. I've got 20 minutes left.
Which one was the third one?
It's Josh Hartnett and Jesse from Breaking Bad.
Yes.
What's his name? I can't remember his name, but I'm sure you know what I mean.
Oh my God.
But that's a pretty fucking sick. Well, I'm literally 20 minutes because it's quite a long
episode.
Aaron Paul, yeah. But, that was an hour and 20 minute episode. So it's kind of like a movie, I guess, but I'm on like the last 20 minutes. But that again, like I just really like the kind of concepts of like, especially like the Lock Henry one, like this obsession with like, serial killer documentaries at the minute and shit like that. And it's kind of using that and like making it into its own storyline. It's pretty cool.
Nothing's ever a million miles away
from
it maybe being like, even like the Josh Hartnett one is a bit fucking mental, but at the same time, like, okay. Mm. But yeah, weird. Just, I don't know. Like, because have you ever watched Inside Number 9?
Inside, no.
So Reese Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton that were from, what's it called? This is a local village for local people. They've basically done, it's a similar, it's not Black Mirror, but it's like, there's like five or six seasons of it, and they're just clip shows.
What is that called?
Not clip. I keep thinking A League of Their Own, and it's not A League of Their Own, because that's a sports show.
It's something Gentlemen, isn't it?
A League of Gentlemen.
A League of Gentlemen.
Fucking hell, Royston Vasey. Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Like, if you've not watched those series, which I'm sure you have, with Papa Lazaro and all the rest of them, and Jeff telling his joke, fucking brilliant. But, so it's Pemberton and Shearsmith that have made Inside Number 9. And it's not Black Mirror, but you could probably lift half a dozen of their concepts out and make them a Black Mirror and be like, there you go. So when you've run out of Black Mirrors, the Inside Number 9 are, there's some fucking really good ones.
Yeah, sick. Yeah. Are they all like individual episodes? Like the
Nothing really carries on, but it's mate, they've done shitloads, and I won't ruin any of them, but I'm sure you've all seen them. But it is like, even because I don't know if it's in America yet, and obviously we've got some listeners from America. If you haven't watched it, have a look. The Inside Number 9 is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Nice.
If you like to be creeped out by weird shit, which obviously we do.
The one thing, because I know the other thing with the Black Mirror is like the first few seasons, it was very like kind of focused on the technology that we're developing and, you know, like what could potentially it could turn into. Yeah. Whereas this one's a little bit more like it's kind of developing stories off like current things.
Yeah.
A little bit more. It's not like, yeah, like with the whole hype of Netflix and streaming and you know, stuff like that, it's really interesting.
He's got his finger on the pulse, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And the thing is, the thing that he's exploiting about us being addicted to shit like that is what's making us watch his.
Yeah.
Even though it's in a kind of reverse ironic thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so
it's
like,
everyone's addicted to social and Netflix. Here's my new series on Netflix. You're like, I'll be addicted to that and watch it all. Do you know what I mean? So,
Streamberry.
Mate, honestly, my friend said, if it wasn't on Netflix, Netflix would be suing him. And I was like, there you go. But you play to your strengths, man.
You know what? They have cracked down. Netflix have cracked down, haven't they, on people sharing their accounts?
Yeah.
Which is shit. But also, Didn't their sales go up like 300% or something the day that they released that? Because obviously, if you had Netflix and you could share it on other devices, but people were using it.
Yeah.
You know, if you had a Netflix, you could send it to two of your mates. And they cracked down on it. But yeah, I think their sales went up stupid, like 300%.
How rich do you need to be, man?
Yeah.
How rich do you need to be, Netflix? Unless you want to sponsor us, you fucking assholes.
It's like when you hear about, Netflix are suffering because of whatever.
I don't think they're really suffering.
Yeah, all right.
They've got big old servers and they've got Adam Sandler on retainer.
But they've also, because I was one of those people using.
Were you a borrower?
I was a borrower, yeah.
Oh, nice.
But I've just recently signed up. So, you know, Netflix, don't worry, I'm not doing it anymore. But I've just signed up to my own account now. And, but they've done a cheaper subscription. It's $4.99 a month now, but you have adverts in it.
So oh, fuck that.
So I don't mind it. I mean, it's $10.99 without adverts. So
yeah, all day, man. Without adverts is HD and without.
I had to see it's piss break.
Oh, mate. The thing is, I don't know if I've just been conditioned to the point that when an advert comes on, because I've just cancelled all my Sky. And no shit, the other day I can't remember what I was watching with Libs. She wanted to watch, I think it was Amazing World of Gumball, which is a cartoon. Mm. You'd love it, it's sick. But we could only find it on Sky. So we sat watching it and the advert between, like in the middle, was on like 6.5 minutes.
Right, yeah. They're not too bad. I think they're only 30 seconds each on Netflix.
Oh, fuck them. I'd be still sharing someone's on a VPN or some shit like that. I'd be like... No, you can knackers. I'd download it illegally off Pirate Bay, like old school, just to prove a point with the adverts already in it.
But yeah, no, it's Black Mirror. I'd 100% recommend watching the new series.
Yeah, man. Jump on it. Let us know what you think. Like I say, I've finished them all, so I can't say too much. But I will say there's a series called Platonic, which is out, which is with Seth Rogen.
Okay.
And Rose... Is it Rose Byrne? The ones that they did Bad Neighbours. He did two films, Bad Neighbours.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. It's proper moochy. It's quite a chill out vibe, but it's a good watch if you've not got a lot to watch at the minute. I think they're half an hour long.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's definitely worth a watch while I'm waiting for Yellowstone to finish its second part of season 5. Yeah. Fucking obsessed with cowboys, man. All day. But yeah, what's that? An hour and 40?
Hour and 40, yeah.
Apart from a little break that you're not going to see, we're just going to edit it out. So that won't be right, will it, when they look at the clock?
Yeah.
No worries. Well,
yeah, man.
Pleasure as always. And don't forget, as normal, jump on Full Reptile, have a look at any deals and offers that you can see. Obviously, got loads of bits and bobs on there and new shirt. There's newshirt.co.uk as our sponsors. They've got the new, there's a few new Star Wars bits on there, the Turtles, there was a load of Street Fighter, and what was the other thing they did? They did the Joypad. Well, just loads. Have a look. I mean, it's nice.
Yeah, the
and
Vegas
cheap.
Sega t-shirt was pretty cool.
Yeah, man. Yeah. In your In and Out Burger, Las Vegas. Maybe they need to send you a Sega.
Oh, yeah, I actually got this in and Out Burger. And actually, no, it was in California, not Vegas.
But, liars.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't have my size when I was there, which I was a bit gutted about. But I ate two of their animal-style burgers.
Yeah.
I can't really grumble too much. So, yeah, well, there you go, episode 15. We'll keep you updated next week. And as always, it's been a pleasure, dude.
Yeah, man.
Take it easy, man.
In a bit.
I felt like a reptile. Like a reptile. I felt like a reptile.